VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for being with us here today on Crosstalk. Ladies and gentlemen, with a vacancy on the United States Supreme Court, as promised, President Donald Trump made his nomination to fill this position on Saturday.
Today it is my honor to nominate one of our nation's most brilliant and gifted legal minds to the Supreme Court. She is a woman of unparalleled achievement, towering intellect, sterling credentials, and unyielding loyalty to the Constitution, Judge Amy Coney Barrett.
Yes, he nominated Federal Appeals Court Judge Amy Coney Barrett to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Senator Lindsey Graham announced that the hearing to consider this nomination beginning on October 12th. Our guest today on Crosstalk has called Judge Barrett an impeccable choice for the High Court. So who exactly is Amy Coney Barrett? What is her judicial philosophy? What about the confirmation fight ahead? Well, here to discuss the nomination and the confirmation process, we welcome back Matt Staver. He's a constitutional attorney, founder, and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So, Matt, give us your feedback to this nomination.
This is an incredible opportunity to really have this nominee here. And you can't have someone better than Amy Coney Barrett. She is absolutely stellar. In fact, if you look at people who even worked with her on different situations, you have back when she clerked with Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, there were she plus 34 other law clerks. These are individuals like her who graduated at the top of the class. And by the way, she graduated number one in her law school class at Notre Dame, but graduated at the top of their class. They're clerking for these various justices at the Supreme Court. There's 35, including Amy. When she was nominated to the Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit, which governs your state in Wisconsin there mm-hmm. in Illinois and those surrounding areas a couple of years ago, every single one of those clerks sent a letter in support saying how much she was qualified to serve on the Court of Appeals. And they said, even though, you know, we disagree with each other, she is an impeccable individual who is very respectful. Every single faculty member of Notre Dame did the same thing. Even though they disagreed with her on various kinds of issues, she is a constitutionalist. She is devoted to the original understanding of the Constitution. And, of course, other people are not constitutionalists, and they're more activists, and that's not Amy Coney Barrett. But despite that, even those people who had completely different judicial philosophies than her that are more in the activist bent, they praised her, every single faculty member of Notre Dame. And in addition to that, she had a long list of faculty members and other law schools around the country who also praised her for her scholarship and her collegiality. She is a woman who has been married for a number of years. I believe it's 18 years. And she has seven children, two of whom were adopted from Haiti. And she appeared with President Trump, with her husband, and all of her children. She's kind of like a super woman, if you will, and being able to balance all of this while she's also a Court of Appeals judge. She's also been a faculty member at Notre Dame, and she has won the Distinguished Faculty Member of the Year three times as voted by the senior class. I know as a law school professor, seeing how competitive that is to have a professor rise to the top among the student peers for their ability to teach and communicate is quite astonishing that she won that 3 years during her time of teaching at Notre Dame. So she is an all-around package. She, you know, for example, when she had a law school student in Notre Dame, there was a blind law school student, and that person was assigned to another professor to help The person was sort of overwhelmed. Amy says, I've got this now. This is my responsibility. And she took over the mentoring of this blind law school student. And that law school student graduated from Notre Dame and became the first blind law clerk in the history of the United States Supreme Court. That's just the personality side, the caring side. And, of course, we're certainly interested in the judicial philosophy side.
And Matt, let me just hear, we're going to play a brief clip, because on Saturday when she was nominated, she gave us a little bit of a hint. She packs a lot here in 30 seconds. Let's hear what she had to say, and then we'll have you come in on her judicial philosophy.
Very moved to have members of the Scalia family here today, including his dear wife, Maureen. I clerked for Justice Scalia more than 20 years ago, but the lessons I learned still resonate. His judicial philosophy is mine, too. A judge must apply the law as written. Judges are not policymakers, and they must be resolute in setting aside any policy views they might hold.
Well, that's a fast 30 seconds, but there's a lot packed in that. 30 seconds, Matt.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's very interesting in terms of how this history has developed. She is being nominated to fill the seat of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She clerked under Justice Antonin Scalia. She has the judicial philosophy of Antonin Scalia, but she also has the personality of a Scalia, in the sense that Scalia was best friends and Ginsburg was best friends with each other. They were best friends, Scalia and Ginsburg. They were kind of like the odd couple. They disagreed on everything as it relates to the law. They couldn't have been further apart on their views of the law. Ginsburg was a judicial activist. Scalia was more focused on the Constitution and the understanding and intent of the statutes and the Constitution.
Judicial restraint.
The judicial restraint. Couldn't be further apart on the legal understanding, jurisprudence, approach to the Constitution spectrum. But yet, they even went out to plays together. They were very affable to one another. Sometimes they went on vacations together. And so the amazing thing is, if you look at Amy, she's being nominated to fill the seat of Ginsburg, but she's in the line of Scalia. It's an amazing turn of history. And when you look at her background, that's in fact the life that she's led. She has, like I said, you don't get all of the law clerks at the Supreme Court. We're talking about clerks that clerked for all the different clerks, all the different justices from both sides of the spectrum. And they all say, look, we may disagree with her, but she is highly qualified. There were people that were on the Supreme Court as clerks. They would go to her for understanding different kinds of statutory interpretation, including, for example, an article that was published by Noah Feldman. He is a very liberal, judicial activist type of professor. But on the other hand, he clerked with her, and he wrote an op-ed in Bloomberg saying the exact same thing. The title is, Amy Coney Barrett Deserves to Be on the Supreme Court. He couldn't disagree with her more than anyone else on substance, but he says her qualifications, her demeanor, her temperament, her approach is very principled. So she embodies in herself both the judicial restraint and constitutionalism to the text, as well as the ability to respect and dialogue with one another, even when their views are different. It's an incredible mixture of personality in this woman, and she will be the first person on the Supreme Court ever to have school-age children, first justice in the history of the United States to actually have school-age children. It's an incredible pick by the president. He could not have done better.
Matt, she's been on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals here for about 3 years now. Do we have any insight as to how she has rendered decisions previously that would give indication of how she would render her court opinions on cases that would come before the highest court?
Yeah, her court decisions, she's had about 100 decisions already in just the short time, couple of years, about 3 years she's been on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, already part of 100 decisions or so. And those are obviously part of her public record as well that they'll review. But they're all very consistent and show a person who's very dedicated to the rule of law, dedicated to the constitutional text. She is an originalist. She is somebody who's going to be focused on the intent and meaning of the law rather than making the law say what somebody wants it to say or even what she her personality wants it to say. So I think even those who are ideologically on the other side, they realize, oops, they've got quite a nominee here. Wolf Blitzer of CNN said, clearly Judge Amy Coney Barrett is highly qualified as a jurist. She has a wonderful, wonderful personal story, a beautiful family, as we all saw. Even the Chicago Tribune editorial board said Barrett, 48, appears to be an excellent choice. We hope the Judiciary Committee will provide a platform for her to explain how she approaches constitutional and statutory issues and address any questions or criticism that senators may have. Even a CNN contributor, Scott Jennings, said ACB Sharpie, she's a lock. Well, I don't know if she is a lock. It's going to be a vicious fight.
Yeah.
But I do think even I've heard some of the Democrats say it looks like the Republicans may have the votes. The Detroit News editorial board said, regardless of the politics at play, Barrett is a strong choice, and she deserves a fair hearing in the Senate. So President Trump did an excellent choice in choosing her. And, of course, she was a candidate last time when he ended up choosing Kavanaugh, and the thought was maybe they wanted to have her on the Supreme Court a little bit longer, or on the Court of Appeals a little bit longer, mm-hmm. I don't know. But she is highly qualified, excellent choice all the way around. And, of course, from our perspective, what we want is someone who is dedicated to the Constitution. That's really what you want. You want somebody who says, look, I'm going to wrestle with the intent and the original meaning of the Constitution. And, you know, if you did that on a lot of these cases, they wouldn't be as controversial. Maybe they might be controversial to some because they don't like it. But the fact of the matter is it's the Constitution. And what we don't want is a Supreme Court that pushes its own ideological agenda. We do have a Constitution. And it's the longest surviving constitution on the planet, and we need to apply it and respect the original words and meaning. And that also involves statutes as well.
Matt, you pointed out she's just 48 years old. I mean, we're talking about an impact on this court that could last three decades, maybe even longer.
Yeah, she would become the youngest Supreme Court justice, not the youngest ever. Clarence Thomas was a couple of years younger than her when he was confirmed on the U.S. Supreme Court. And you know, you mentioned the time frame of getting this done. That these hearings will start October 12th, and the plan is to have her confirmed. All goes well by the end of the month, but it's going to be a full court press because mm-hmm. already a Boston professor, as you know, has come out and called her a white colonialist. Why? Because she adopted two black children from Haiti.
Let's pick up with that
unreal.
After the... Yeah, it's crazy, folks. It's outrageous what is going on here with some of these attacks. We're going to pick up with that very point right after the break. Don't go away. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Matt Staver is with us today, a constitutional attorney, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Back in a minute.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, did the Ice Age really happen?
Yes, indeed, Chris. There's a great deal of evidence that the Ice Age really happened. It wasn't long ago. It was at the end of Noah's flood. It probably took several hundred years for the Earth to settle back down into the equilibrium we now experience. That readjustment period was primarily the Ice Age. The real key for the Ice Age is more evaporation from the ocean waters, making huge storms of snowfall possible. But the continents were cold, making the storms violent and prolonged. Also, late in the flood was a time of great volcanism, meaning that the Earth's atmosphere was cloudy and shielded the Earth from the sun. So there was more snowfall, less snow melt, and the ice built up. This would have happened in the centuries following the flood. And that's the flood mentioned back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
President Donald Trump has named his nominee for the vacancy on the Supreme Court of the United States, Amy Coney Barrett. With us today is Matt Staver, constitutional attorney, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt, you were just pointing out, I mean, these attacks that are coming out. I mean, we saw attacks even before she was nominated for this position. Yeah. Other attacks followed, and some of these are just way off the charts. You mentioned, for instance, she has seven children. Two of them are adopted from Haiti. And the social media attack refers to her and her husband as being white colonialist who adopted black children, civilized these savage children in their superior ways of white people while using them as props in their lifelong pictures of denial while cutting biological parents of these children out of the picture of humanity. I mean, they state that this adoption is to shield herself from accusations of racism. Personal attacks like these, Matt, they are outrageous. Where's the left to even denounce them?
Yeah, I mean, she adopted these before she ever was on, you know, this situation in this spotlight like this. She adopted them because she wanted to, as any parent would adopt. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm going to adopt these so people can't call me racist. I mean, how stupid is that?
Yes.
I mean, that's just offensive. And how offensive it is to these children. I mean, these children are living human beings. They have a loving family, a loving mom and dad. They were rescued from their situation by a mother and father who ultimately reached out and adopted them and is giving them a wonderful home in which to live. She also has her youngest child has a disability as well. So she knows in her family, I mean, you look at the closeness of her family and her commitment to her family, it's absolutely incredible. To criticize her on that really, I think, reveals the evil that people want to and will ultimately try to throw against her. You remember Kavanaugh, and Kavanaugh was awful what they did to him, but they're going to be just as brutal on Amy Coney Barrett because they know that they've just lost this seat of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg was the most judicial activist justice on the Supreme Court on every particular area. She was always voting on the other side of this issue. On life, she never voted in favor. She'd always vote against. On the Ten Commandments argument that I argued, voted against. On the issue of, you know, you name it, Second Amendment and other kinds of things, such as Obamacare. She's always going to be on the wrong side. On the Peace Cross, remember that the Supreme Court upheld in Maryland, voted on the other side of that, didn't want to have these religious memorials, and in this case, honoring the war veterans. And if you look at the cases that were up there just in this past term, voted against them as well. Strong religious freedom cases, voted against them. And we have other cases that are now pending, a very big one right now. This is why we need the seat filled. And that's a case where a state is telling Catholic Charities Foster and Adoption Agency that they must place children in same-sex households, despite your religious belief to the contrary. And, of course, if that's the case, this adoption ministry will have to close down. That case is pending before the U.S. Supreme Court. It's going to be argued this fall. If we wouldn't even have to guess where Ginsburg would come down on that. And that's why we need this seat filled, because we don't want a 4-4 split. That means you have no decision at all. You go through all this process, 4-4 split, no decision. We have cases that we're getting ready to file. We have a case that's being conferenced at the U.S. Supreme Court on the 29th of September, which is tomorrow. It's going to be conferenced even before they start their term. It's called the Super Conference, where they look at cases to take. It's the Kim Davis case out of Kentucky with the clerk that refused to issue same-sex marriage cases. That's been up there conference many times. They've then moved it to this particular conference to see if they want to take that case. We'll know in the near future. we're getting ready to file a petition for review of the Romanian church cases out of Illinois, out of Chicago area, and we'll be doing that within the next week. We need 9 justices and to be on the Supreme Court when that happens.
Matt, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said this. He said, President Trump could not have made a better decision. Judge Amy Coney Barrett is an exceptionally impressive jurist and exceedingly well-qualified nominee to the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, previously, we have Chuck Schumer and Pat Leahy saying the American Bar Association evaluation is the gold standard by which judicial candidates are judged. And what's interesting, in 2017, the majority of the standing committee of the ABA was of the opinion that Amy Coney Barrett is well qualified. But now we have Chuck Schumer saying Amy Coney Barrett is wildly out of the mainstream.
Yeah, I know. And also you have Ginsburg saying back in 2016, that the Senate needs to do its job and look at confirmation, that the president doesn't stop being president in his last year. You have the same thing from Chuck Schumer saying the exact same thing. You also have a history of about 20 judges, justices that were confirmed in the last year of the president's term. So this is nothing unusual. You have Chief Justice John Roberts, his hearing from start to finish was, he got confirmed in 23, 26 days. So there is nothing unprecedented about what is happening here in terms of the president gets to nominate. It's the Senate, which is in the majority, the Republican Senate, Republican president. They're going to do their job. They need to have an up and down vote, and they need to vote based on credentials. And you can't get more credentialed than Amy Coney Barrett. In terms of her academic ability, number one in her class at Notre Dame. She's been in private law practice. She's been a professor for many years at Notre Dame, top professor in that school, endorsed by all 49 of her Notre Dame colleagues. And tell you what, that's a hard thing to do. And I can say that they don't all agree with her judicial philosophy. There's some on the complete opposite side of the fence. Endorsed by all of our 34 other law clerks at the U.S. Supreme Court, endorsed by hundreds of other professors, is a judicial constraint person, believes in the original intent of the Constitution. And you can go on and on and on about why she deserves to have a very quick hearing and be on that Supreme Court very quickly.
And it's no secret, though, that the Democratic Party is just outraged at this nomination. I saw a story from a Daily Wire, including one of the considerations for Democrats is to boycott the Senate confirmation process. And then you've got like Senator Hirano of Hawaii, Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut said, we're not even going to meet with this nominee because it would legitimize President Trump's decision to nominate an individual for that position. Some are viewing that as really being childish. Your thoughts on it?
Oh, it is childish, and you know, it's childish, and that's why we need to pray for Amy and her family. Remember how bad it was for the Kavanaugh family to go through all this, and we've already had threats, people coming to the judiciary chairman in early hours of the morning with loud noises, and even having people trained on how to break down his door, Senator Lindsey Graham. So these people are being threatened, and you know, we just need to put everything in prayer and proceed ahead, knowing that there's going to be a lot of rough waters ahead, but she deserves to be on that bench.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, I mean, we got liberal writers that are promising riots, and not just riots, but more better riots. Let's talk also here about the former Vice President Biden, and he's been quick to condemn this nomination, the process, saying the vacancy should not be filled. And I find it interesting that he's keeping very close to his chest a listing of names he would nominate to the highest court. President Trump's been very open on that. What kind of nominees would we be seeing from him?
Oh, well, you can imagine what kind of nominees we'd be seeing from him nominees that have no respect at all for the Constitution. That's just another political hack on the Supreme Court. That would just be a vote for his ideology rather than for what the Constitution or the laws say. That's not the kind of judge you need. If that's what you want to do, run for office. You're free to get enough people to support you, and you can push your views on your various state or federal legislative body sessions, but you're going to have to, you know, get another majority of people to follow you. That's the place to go. Or you could, you know, start your own public interest organization and be an activist that way. But a place for an activist is not in a black row behind a bench. So, you know, in this situation, if you delay the nomination, if Biden, you know, like he says, well, it should wait until the next election, that would mean that you don't have a president that's seated until January 20, meaning you couldn't even nominate until January 20 of 2021. And you would then go through the hearing process. You would have an entire term of the U.S. Supreme Court wasted because so many decisions would be 4-4. You would not have anybody on the Supreme Court. That's why it's so important to get this seat filled now.
And what's interesting, though, too, Matt, is that, and even Justice Ginsburg had said, you know, a 4-4, eight people is not a good arrangement here when she was talking about this
right.
some years ago. But what's interesting is now we have Nancy Pelosi, who is actually starting to map out and work with her colleagues in the Democratic-controlled House a method for determining the president if it has to come down to the House to do so.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Matt, let's also just take a look here at something else going on in the House. And last Thursday, we saw Reuters report that House Democrats plan to introduce legislation this week that, if passed, would limit the tenure of each justice to just 18 years. Currently, they have lifetime appointments. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, that would be, they would have to do more than just a statute to do that. There was one court that they can't really deal with, and they can't get rid of it, and that's the U.S. Supreme Court. That's the only court in the Constitution that is required. All the other courts, they have the power to create them or to limit them or to even remove them. Now, over time, there have been attempts to change the number of justices on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been talk about that as well. So I think don't underestimate anything that some of these liberals, radicals will ultimately try to do, whether it's trying to, if Biden were to win, to increase the number to 11, or if they have enough votes in the House and Senate to do it, so they can put some more justices on there, or to do term limits so that they can take all the people out, such as Clarence Thomas and some of the others, and then open up seats for them to fill and literally pack the court. I mean, these kinds of threats, understand, this really is to the very heart of the Republic. This is the political branch ultimately trying to upset one of the branches of government. And they're there for a reason, checks and balances. And the check is on the Constitution. And the problem that we've had with the court in the past is that oftentimes it's not the Constitution. It's different people's ideology. And we need to get back the court to being an umpire that just sits behind the plate, doesn't go out and try to play the game, but just sits behind the plate and calls the balls and strikes as they come across the plate and just does it objectively. That's what their job is, to literally just be a passive entity that when the case comes before it, those individuals adhere to the Constitution and the statute that they're interpreting. That's it.
So, Matt, as you've observed Amy Coney Barrett's decisions in the past, would you classify her as that one who does call the balls and strikes?
I do. Yeah, I definitely do. That's what her judicial philosophy has been from the very beginning.
We'll take a quick break. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel. Their website, lc.org, lc.org. Back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Cemeteries and mausoleums are evidence of the sad reality of death, and that each of us has a divine appointment with death. According to surveys, Americans overwhelmingly believe that heaven exists and believe that most are going there. A small number believes that hell exists, with only one half of 1% believing they will go there when they die. What if those who do not believe in hell die one day and find they made a tragic and eternal mistake? In the book, Hell is for Real, author Gary Fraser discusses the separation, the suffering, and the sorrow of hell, along with future events that will unfold. There is much information given by movies, television, psychics, and even by many religious circles. Gary presents scriptural truth on this important topic. VCY is making available the book, Hell is for Real, as our way of saying thank you for your support of $15 or more. Two copies for a donation of $25. Just ask for it when you call 1-800-729-9829.
Constitutional attorney Matt Staver with us today on Crosstalk. Ladies and gentlemen, he has argued before all levels of the court, including landmark cases before the United States Supreme Court. He's well familiar with this court and giving his evaluation here of the pick, Amy Coney Barrett, by President Donald Trump. Our telephone lines are open. If you have a question you'd like to ask or a brief comment, our number, 800-733-9829. Get on board here, 800-733-9829. We don't have opportunity for long discourses, but if you have a brief comment or a question, give us a call here at 800-733-9829. So, Saturday, Matt, Amy Coney Barrett was nominated as by the president to fill the position. What happens between now and that whole process? What is that process?
Yes, this week, of course, is getting prepared. Next week, we'll begin some of the visits to the various senators. And then the Amy Coney Barrett will appear on Monday, October 12th. The questioning will begin on Tuesday. October 13th, she'll be making opening statements on that day, on the 12th. The opening statements by the Judiciary Committee members and the nominee will occur on Monday, October 12th. Then she'll appear for questioning on the next day, Tuesday, October 13th. So those are just the opening statements, but in the meantime, preparation this week, and obviously next week she'll start the visits, and she may even start some visits this week with various senators on the Hill. And she'll be visiting people of both Democrats, Republicans, Independents, both aisles on the Senate, certainly those that will meet with her. And she'll begin that process, I think, when they, even those people who are opposed to her filling this seat, I think when they meet her, they're going to see the same kind of Amy Coney Barrett that has won her praise in terms of her ability to interact and be very cordial and respectful of all the different people. They'll try to certainly ask her where she stands on certain cases, but she's not going to be able to answer that. She can talk about her judicial philosophy to interpretation, and of course she'll be asked those kinds of questions for the hearing. What will ultimately happen is those hearings are not going to go that long. They'll have some time in the meantime to have some hearings and questioning. But then the plan is to ultimately bring this up for a vote by the end of the month of the full Senate. So it'll go from the Judiciary Committee eventually to the full Senate for a recommendation, and then that's when the full Senate will ultimately bring this up for a vote. But you remember, that was a fairly quick process with Kavanaugh, and then mm-hmm. you remember what happened.
Yes.
The Democrats delayed it.
Mm-hmm.
And wanted to go back for more information, more investigation. And so it lagged a little bit. So, you know, nothing is for sure.
Yeah.
That's for sure in this situation.
Already procedural moves have been used to delay matters, and they will be tried again and again.
Yeah, and, you know, at the end of the day, there's nothing in the Constitution that requires a hearing to be conducted. All they just need to do is advise and consent. That doesn't require hearings. So if the Democrats ultimately want to boycott hearings, they don't need the hearings. And hopefully, you know, if that's the case, it's not going to be the divulging to the depths of meanness that we saw with Kavanaugh. So, you know, if they want to play that game, then, you know, there's another way to combat that. On the other hand, in 2017, she was already before the full Senate.
Right, right.
So she's already gone through a full vetting, and that's how she's on the Court of Appeals at this moment.
Tom is calling from Port Wing. You're on the air, Tom.
Good afternoon. My question for Matt is this. You were talking about the justices being an umpire, yet the former Justice Ginsburg performed a gay marriage. Then she refused to recuse herself, and then she made a judgment on gay marriage on a 9-4 or a 5-4 split.
Right.
Now, did she not violate the law and then rule and make the law into something she would not be held accountable for?
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, Tom, I think you're right. The problem is that there's nothing higher than the Supreme Court, so you can't appeal to anything else when a judge doesn't recuse him or herself. And in this case, Ruth Bader Ginsburg should have no question recused herself from hearing that case because she knew the cases on same-sex marriage were coming to the U.S. Supreme Court. She did that marriage there, right there in Washington, D.C., in 2013, the case ultimately was accepted for review in 2014. She knew it was coming, and then the decision was handed down 5-4, and she was certainly in the five on the last week of June 2015. So, yeah, that's the problem, and that's an example of what I said earlier about Ginsburg being the most judicial activist on the high court. You can't get more in-your-face activist than that example that you just gave.
And let's go on. Thank you for the call, Tom. Manny in Maricopa, Arizona, you're on the air.
I just find it a little bit crazy, the hypocrisy of the liberals. If celebrities are allowed to go in Africa and adopt, and they're not colonialists, but she is.
Yeah.
That's my comment.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you. I mean, it's wherever you can create a controversy, it is there, and there is no bottom to the depths and we'll go.
We don't think in those terms because we're not that mean. And yet, you know, it's shocking when you see somebody come to her and call her a colonialist when she's actually reaching into and literally transforming these young, boy and this young girl's lives. And they're in a loving family. And look, I mean, they read, they hear, and these people don't really care. They're out for an end goal, and anything, any means is okay to them, and that's just not okay, and we need to push back and obviously pray for the family.
Mark is next. Go ahead, Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is my question to Matt. How do you think the potential clash between Catholic Joe Biden and Catholic Amy Coney Barrett will end up playing itself out from a political standpoint?
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Well, I don't know. Certainly Amy is not going to be the one clashing on that issue, and Biden's not going to be able to question her. But Biden needs to be careful because you remember what happened with Kavanaugh when he was going through this process and they were so mean to him. The tide actually turned against them, and the polls turned against them. Here you have a woman that's impeccable, a family that is a wonderful family. You can't script this any more favorable to the nominee than the way reality actually is. So they're going to have to be careful. And I remember in 2017, it was Dianne Feinstein, Senator Dianne Feinstein said, well, you know, with your dogma, it seems that your dogma speaks loudly through you.
Mm-hmm.
And people came to the defense of Amy Coney Barrett and really came against Senator Dianne Feinstein for that anti-religious comment, shocking that it was that she made during the hearings.
Brent is calling in from Santa Fe, New Mexico. You're on the air. Hello, Brent.
Keep the situation in prayer, because listen, the prayers we do today will cover us for tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's very, very prudent that we stay focused with Donald Trump's choice of the Supreme Court justice. And like I said, I can't emphasize it enough. With the prayers today will cover us for tomorrow. And they have covered us. If we look back, what they, all the attacks that they've done on him, and he's still in force, and that goes to show that the prayers do work. That's what I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, they do. And you know the amazing thing that happened this past Saturday? You didn't see any of that in the mainstream media. But the White House estimated about 100,000 people. Other people said there may have been 200,000 people on the Washington Mall. We're talking about at least 100,000 people that gathered there to pray. Franklin Graham and so many others. And then you also had The Return with Jonathan Cahn. They were there at the same time. Neither one of those coordinated those days, apparently, because they wouldn't have chosen the same day. But they were there. And they were all day. And they went and prayed for a nation and for all the different branches. And then amazingly, what happened is at 5 o'clock, President Donald Trump announced the nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, all on the same day. What an amazing day. And you see people all over the country gathering together with them to pray. Franklin Graham said that there were like 3.8 or 3.2 million people that were actually watching online, in addition to all the people that were gathered there in the nation's capital to pray.
Indeed. Again, folks, be praying daily, not only for the election and be praying for your leaders, but be praying for this confirmation process. Scripture tells us that the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Let's go to Jason next in Dodgeville. You're on the air, Jason.
Hey, I was just wondering, well, and first of all, thank you, Matt, for everything you do.
Thank you.
You know, for religious freedom and everything. It's awesome to hear you every day talking about the good things and, unfortunately, some of the bad things. But like you said, the Supreme Court is the highest, and, you know, I mean, there's no going beyond that. But what would it take for something, and I don't know, I mean, maybe Roe versus Wade and the abortion issue is the biggest thing. How would something like that get revisited or something else, something else near it happen to kind of squash or supersede that?
Good question. Thank you, Jason.
Good question. It doesn't take a direct attack on Roe versus Wade for Roe versus Wade to actually be put before the high court and then considered for reversal. Back in 1992, Roe versus Wade, when it was, or Planned Parenthood versus Casey, when it was argued, was not a direct attack on Roe. It was clinic regulations and informed consent. Yet the original vote was 5-4 to overturn Roe, the decision on which those precedents were based. And Rehnquist was writing the opinion for 30 days, but then Kennedy changed his vote 30 days into it, and it became 5-4 to uphold Roe versus Wade with some modifications. So it only takes a case involving abortion. Could be clinic regulation, hospital of privileges that doctors need to have, informed consent, anything. And Roe versus Wade will become front and center at the high court. It's just a matter of time because there's a lot of cases being requested for the Supreme Court to review involving a wide variety of abortion legislation and restrictions. You also have religious freedom. You have a big religious freedom case that's going to be argued early this fall. That's a huge one with the, as I mentioned already, with the adoption agency. Marriage, the whole same-sex marriage issue, Second Amendment issue, there were already in this past term a whole boatload of cases that were requested for review. The court didn't take them, but they may well do so in the next term. You know, we have the Kim Davis case pending there from Kentucky. We also are getting ready to file our case involving these church restrictions that these governors are doing. So there's a wide variety of issues that will be coming before the Supreme Court.
Thank you, Jason. And keep in mind, Dred Scott was once a Supreme Court decision that was overturned, and rightfully so. Thank you for the call. We are going to take a quick break. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel will come back in our final segment with more of your phone calls. So stay with us as you listen to Crosstalk here. Our phone number, 800-733-9829, and Matt's website at libertycouncillc.org. The letter L, the letter C, .org. Back in a minute.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. See the story recently where a Washington-based attorney wrote a column for the Huffington Post talking about how the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her fear over the issue of reproductive rights led her to join the Satanic Temple. Now, don't confuse the Satanic Temple with the Church of Satan. They want you to believe there's not a lot of similarities. But ironically, the Satanic Temple uses a lot of occultic satanic symbolism. But they also declare that they reject tyrannical authority. What authority would that be, my friends? The authority of absolute truth. And they're very hostile to Christians, particularly those that evangelize with a biblical gospel. This is simply, again, proof that the Democrat Marxist Party and many of the Satanists are indeed carrying out a spiritual battle, a war.
You're listening to Crosstalk. We're discussing today the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett to be the next justice on the United States Supreme Court. This was announced Saturday from the White House. And with us today, Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel giving analysis to this. Let's continue with our calls. We have Sally in Milwaukee calling. Hi, Sally. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call and for being there for us.
Mm-hmm.
Two things. I'm number one of the Jewish faith and have always been my whole life, and I'm not against any religion or satanic cults, nothing. I'm not against any of that. I want you to believe what is good for you and right for you, but to choose for Trump to choose a woman who is against abortion, because I believe in women's rights and a right of a woman to choose whether she can handle it or not, even if she's against abortion for maybe for herself, but she believes that every woman should have the right to decide in this own particular situation that they're in, whether they have to have it, need it, or whatever. I'm for that, for mm-hmm. that side of a woman's right to choose. And the mm-hmm. fact that she is not, that she doesn't believe a woman should have a right over that situation I'm against killing, but I also believe in women's rights, and I think that if she's going to take the viewpoint against women's rights, that she's definitely
right. Okay,
let me jump in there, and I appreciate your comments at the beginning, but you're making some assumptions that are incorrect, that she's taking a view against women's rights. She's never done anything like that. And that she is going to take away a woman's rights. She's never done anything like that. She's a judge. She's not a legislature. So she's going to interpret whatever the Constitution says. She hasn't prejudged any case like that. So she's going to, and what we really want, let me just put it in this term. Say you enter into a contract to sell your home, and you enter into a mortgage with the bank, and you have it all down, and the words mean something, and they have an understanding, and you have an understanding, and it's a 30-year mortgage. Now you start paying it, and after a while, they said, I don't like this anymore. You need to start paying us more. And they come back, and you say, well, no, the contract says this. And they say, well, we don't really care about that contract. You're going to have to start adding another $1,000 a month to your mortgage. That's not fair. What ultimately needs to do is you need to enter into a new negotiation for different terms. And when we have a constitution, we have debated that constitution, the people adopt it, or when the legislature creates a statute, they create a statute, they debate over the words, they adopt it. It's not the judge's role to come in there and change the words of the statute. The judge's role is to say, you know, whether I have personal opinions this way or not, that's not relevant. What is relevant is what's on the paper before me. Now, if the people don't like how the statute, like the Constitution, comes to a particular decision or the statute, then we have mechanisms to change that. And we've done many amendments to our United States Constitution because of that very reason. And statutes are amended, and they're repealed, and they're modified, and they're changed because we wanted to have a different result. But it's not the judge's duty to do that. And that's really what she is somebody who's going to just interpret the words and intent of what that constitution or statute means.
Now, Sally, we're going to be delving more into this tomorrow with Brad Mattis, Lord willing, from the Life Issues Institute, and we'll be focusing more on the courts and the abortion issue. We'd like to welcome you to join us tomorrow, but I can see you are very conflicted in your heart on this very matter, because you say you're against killing, but you're in favor of a woman's right to kill a child. So, I mean, if you believe a woman should be able to kill her child, you're really not against killing. So you think that over. Join us further tomorrow on the program. Andrew is calling in from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. You're on the air.
Yeah, just a statement and then a sentiment. The statement is this. I learned recently that anybody who has ever performed an abortion has violated the Hippocratic Oath.
Okay, let's deal right with our issue here today, Andrew, with the Supreme Court.
Well, I hope that these judges understand some of these things in conjunction with what they have to make decisions on, so that they can make, you know, true and informed and balanced, you know, decisions.
Sure, and they have to make those decisions, Matt, based upon...
based upon the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Based upon the Constitution, not what they read in the newspaper, not even what they, you know, they just need to, is this or is this not in the Constitution? Fairly simple up and down question.
Thank you, Andrew. John is next. You're on the air, John.
Hey, great. Thanks for your time. I'll keep it quick. Matt, there's lots of rumors that you see on the internet of John Roberts being compromised. How much validity do you think that there is to that? You see it on the internet that supposedly he was on that.
Yeah, there's a lot. I don't think that anybody's got a bribe over his head or they're going to out him on something. I think there is something to say about, you know, living in Washington, D.C. and being around certain circles, and you just have to be grounded in your worldview. And somebody like, for example, Thomas has been there for many, many years, and he hasn't changed a bit. He's still the same affable individual, but also very dedicated to the constitutional principles and interpretation.
Thank you, John. Appreciate your call here today. Matt, what's at stake with this nomination?
Oh, my goodness. You know, when you look at Ginsburg, she said, for example, that abortion was to get rid of the undesirables. You know, we've heard that before, and you can hear that all the way back with Nazism. They wanted to get rid of the undesirables, the people that they didn't think deserved to live. And Ginsburg actually adhered to that philosophy. That's her actual words. You know, she went to Egypt and she said, don't look to our constitution, look to South Africa's constitution. So here's a jurist on the Supreme Court not even recommending her own constitution as a model. She was wrong on so many different issues. And so this is a huge opportunity to bring the court back to a position where it's just simply an umpire calling the balls and strikes, not getting into the game and running the bases. I mean, that's a player, the person at bat, that's their job. It's not the catcher. They just sit there and call the balls and strikes. That's it. That's what judges are supposed to do. And that will be a joy to be able to have that happen, because the Supreme Court is used in law schools. It affects law school students and law schools. And those go throughout the world. And the Supreme Court is looked at around the world by other Supreme Courts as well. So we need to get it back to the Supreme Court the way it should be, interpreting the law, not making the law.
Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel, lc.org, their website. Matt, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And folks, keep in mind, it's your senators that will be casting the vote to confirm or not to confirm. You can be in contact with them at 202-224-3121. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.